of kid.
All I gotta say is Portland can't say shit.
It's scintillating. It's sensational. It's Seattle Sounders FC soccer.
Welcome to Sounders Scuttlebutt. We are recording April 24th, a day later than we normally like to, but we're recording, and we didn't record last week.
So 8 days.
Sorry, what?
8 days later.
8 days later. Yeah, 8 days later than we normally would like to. That was your Alliance Council President, Gorilla FC President, and the communications director for the Independent Supporters Council, Cameron Collins. And I am Aaron Lingley. I feel like I just kind of stopped after that 0-0 draw, which is boring. It was
Dallas.
Goose egg.
Dallas.
Couple of goose eggs, yeah. I was just like, I don't know. I had a lot of going on at work, coming back 8 week old. We just didn't communicate when we should record. So we're sorry about that, everyone. I'm sure you were just anxiously refreshing your podcast app, waiting for the next scuttlebutt to drop.
I gotta tell you, oh no, that was the week before when I was so hungover. I was okay last week.
Yeah, you were hungover when I was actually in Dallas before the Sounders were there.
Yep. And actually today we're recording at the perfect time because I have had, a migraine aura for the last 24 plus 5 hours or so. So it cleared just in time for you to open up your beer.
Well, what cures a good migraine or hangover is an Elysian Contact Haze. Hazy IPA. Mm. Yummy.
Sounded good.
Variety pack, baby. My next beer will be the good old-fashioned Space Dust, my favorite.
Of course, I have a Tangerine LaCroix, which LaCroix is one of the lowest in particles per billion of man-made plastic and other materials. So definitely, if you're trying to avoid those, drink this and not Topo Chico, although Topo Chico is amazing.
It's sad that we have to be concerned about that.
I know, right?
I just want water, please. Well, this has the least amount of plastic in it. Oh, fantastic.
Oh yeah, man.
Have you tried Spindrift?
Yeah, that's actually, I believe, the lowest of all of the Spindrift, and then the what's the other one that's local that is like different flavors and it's in the clear bottle. Clear tall bottle. That's the other one that's the two lowest.
So I don't know,
Stick to those and you'll be safe.
A water sommelier.
Yeah.
I do love me some poppy, though.
The ice. You know, like they have like raspberry flavored and all those other ones.
They're in plastic bottles.
I know, right? But they don't have chemicals or stuff like that in them. So they're all in plastic bottles. Huh. But we're actually seeing a push away from that now, back to aluminum and cartons, like milk carton type stuff. Because
was it the best water's box water? Isn't that a thing?
Yeah. But turns
like
out
an actual name of the water,
because there's so much stuff being recycled that recycled plants can't use it all, so it all gets thrown away anyways.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. It's like we can't do anything right to save the planet, man.
I know, it's just awful.
So let's have kids, said the Lingley family.
Maybe one of them,
Margot. Sorry, Gracie.
Maybe they'll solve the problems of the world.
Yeah, we shouldn't have to do that. But anyway, let's not talk about depressing things.
That's the thing is, I thought this was going to be one of the more depressing episodes of our show all time. And then Arriaga got traded, and really, this is a fucking celebration. This is bigger. This is bigger than winning the three championship. Wait, did we win three? Yeah, the three MLS Cups. This is bigger than winning.
We won two MLS Cups, Cameron.
We only won two?
Yeah.
You're right.
Should have won three.
Three U.S. Open Cups then, right?
Four. Oh. You're the Alliance Council president.
We have so many trophies.
Look up at the stadium.
Here's the problem. Well, first off, it's above me, so I can't see it. It's right above me. But secondly, we have so many trophies that I can't keep track. That's how crazy it is. We just have so many because we're a team of glory. We're a team of fellowship, and we're a team of community. That's right. That's the GFC motto. But none of that matters because this is the greatest day in Sounders history. Arriaga's gone. Goodbye, fucker.
You don't swear it too often.
No, that guy sucks. That's my job. They put him in the other day, and he did exactly what we knew he was going to do, give up a goal, because that guy has been garbage ever since the first leg of that Western Conference final when he shoved that dude and was badass. And ever since then, actually, it's been since the 2020 MLS's back bubble stuff. He's been terrible, and he's a bigot. He's homophobic.
True. Yep.
Get him out of here. Goodbye.
Yeah, so that'll be part of our scuttlebutt.
Yeah, Nathan's sweet. I'm really excited.
And was available last weekend.
Yeah, he actually played. He was not in the 18, though. He did play minutes down at the Defiance to get ready. So we assume he'll be the starting center back this coming week because as we talk about, Reagan got a red card, which was controversial at the time. I'm not sure if it still is. We will discuss.
He wasn't in the 18.
No, he was not. I should have saved my rant, mainly because I have a different rant I want to go on. To get ready for our friends here, our listeners, our passionate lovers who follow our every step, I went to find out. I wanted the exact numbers. I know you texted them on the Arriaga trade, and I had to read two different Jeremiah Oshan articles. And that dude is one of the worst writers I've ever seen. And it really bugs me that he's considered a journalist. One of the best days in Seattle journalism was when he was dragged for 9 straight hours on KJR because he said to Coach Schmetzer, well, some people are saying blah, blah, blah in a critical way. And Coach was like, oh, yeah, Jeremiah, who are some people? Who are some people? Well, the some people was Jeremiah because he was the only one that wrote that article because he's a hack. So very exciting to have to have read those articles. I hope I never have to do it again. I'm going to roll tonight.
Yeah, you are.
I feel that way all the time.
I mean, we knew you had some disdain for Jeremiah, but it goes to be said that we will never be on a joint podcast with Sounder Art.
I've turned down podcast opportunities where he's been on it. Where I've been offered to be on a podcast with him. I say that is not a good idea. I cannot sit there and let him do his bullshit conjecture where he makes shit up. I will call him on it like he did in both articles I read. He takes a small quote and makes it bigger, or he just makes up facts and creates false hypotheticals.
Well, I was just going to say, why don't we get into our scuttlebutt? Let's try to get some sense of formality to our silly ass podcast here about our silly ass Sounders. What scuttlebutt would you like to start with? I'm going to give you
I guess the good news is that we have a time frame for De La Vega coming back. Was it C97 that asked about that in our Discord, which of course you should be on if you like the show and you can interact.
Yeah, may I read it for you?
Yes, please.
Okay, Seed97 in the Discord, link in the show description, as Cameron was about to say before I rudely interrupted him. I don't know the specific timetable for PDLV, when PDLV comes back from injury, but at this point, will it basically be like a summer signing akin to Ladero back in 2016 that turns our horrible season around? Fingers crossed emoji.
Yeah, thankfully, also fingers crossed, no. He is due to be back in 4 weeks, which would put him in smack dab the end of May before the Memorial Day holiday. So that would give us an extra month plus of him. So barring another setback in his return, I think we should be okay. So we just got to make it through a pretty rough slate of games in some way, especially because we have a midweek game coming up due to the rescheduled game. I'm curious what they're going to do, because Javi started that game. So you have to start all this. You have to put all the same players in because it starts in the fifth minute. So I guess they allow someone, since he's not on the team, they have to allow someone else to start. But during that run of play, during that run of play, we play at DC, at Philadelphia, host the Galaxy, a U.S. Open Cup match versus Louisville, at Portland, at Salt Lake, host Vancouver, at St. Louis, and then host Salt Lake. So there's a stretch there that, you know, especially since those are Western Conference teams, our season may be decided, not totally, but largely at that point, if we keep playing like we're playing. And he'll just be coming in to try and, you know, I guess we could still make the playoffs. We're just not going to win the West. We're not going to win the Supporters Shield.
So that's potentially 8 MLS matches and an Open Cup match in the next 4 weeks.
And remember, Open Cup match is our only way into Champions League, probably, unless we win the MLS Cup.
Unless there's something akin to Ladero.
Also, well, Reed Baker Whiting, he's off training on the side and may travel to the East Coast for the games this weekend. So Reed may be back. We always like to see that. He's a good guy to have at least on our bench.
Yeah, we're reading that, I'm looking at the schedule as well. And we haven't had any roster congestion to this point, which was a comment that Schmetzer had made, I think, in, I don't know at what point after the match. But
we do now.
Kind of, but we fucking, I don't think I've ever seen it this bad. I've seen like a 2-week stretch where you're playing 3 matches.
No, this is like a month. 4,
you know, this is like 6 weeks. June 1st. Columbus June 1st is the last of the stretch, and there is not a week break, I think, at all in between.
And
Vancouver to St. Louis is
that's a week. The only one. Okay. But otherwise, we play Saturday, Tuesday, Sunday, Wednesday. It's like, if I'm doing this right, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday or Friday. Then there's a week. And then another midweek game. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4 midweek games. Plus, we could pick up another U.S. Open Cup match in there. I don't know when the next round is, but I bet you it's near the end of the month.
Do you think that's going to be – is there any positives to that? Kind of just like buckle down. Let's – you know, if we lose, we got a game a couple of days later.
Yeah. We can't – you know, you kind of just kind of like – what do you call it?
Sulk.
We got to keep playing. Sounds like that's not what's happening, according to Fry. You know, the locker room hasn't been lost, which actually surprises me. They apparently before training this week, they had a 30-minute player only meeting where everyone talked. That's good. But I don't know. This last match, they just felt like they were not. There was no urgency.
Well, Well, you know, we'll get into the actual match performance in our standard second half. But I hear you.
Oh, and guess what? The round of 16 for U.S. Open Cup is in that week break we talked about. So there would be another game pop in there.
Shit.
So potentially 9 matches in 5 weeks.
Oof. A lot of soccer. Let's just hope it's some decent soccer.
Yeah. Oh, if we go on a run, though, could be fun. Could be very fun.
Yeah. Another, and you mentioned it to start off the show. You didn't just mention it. You were exulting. But the Candy Golem in our Discord, did New England Revolution get a good deal with the hobby trade?
That's tough.
So beyond your bias and your personal opinion. from a just a book standpoint and player standpoint, is this a good deal?
I mean, anytime you can trade a roster spot for a player, especially a national team player, in theory, yeah, I think it's probably a good deal. But I don't know where they are in terms. Is he coming in as a backup? Is he coming in and they're expecting him to start? You know, it's a good deal, especially if they felt like their goal differential was too high and they wanted it to get lower so he could let in some goals. that would be a good deal. No, it's a terrible deal. But you know what? Maybe he just needs a change of scenery, right? There's a reason why he keeps getting picked for the Ecuador national team. Maybe by going over to New England, it gives him a chance to have some more confidence, not lose out to a 22-year-old, work in good graces. It sounds like, from what Fry had said, he was the punching bag in the locker room in a good-natured way. But I still feel like that might get to you over time if you're the one that's always being made fun of. So maybe it's a new start for him and a new chance to play well. You know, more power to him. You know, once a sounder, always a sounder. He had a few key moments as a sounder, although we don't really celebrate Mark Birch. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. And he did part of his accolades was during the stretch of the Champions League at the time of 2022. He played in every single match in that run, 8-game run, and was named to the best 11 of the tournament. So he's got that going for him.
Yeah.
I mean, as a whole, we played good defense and we played some quality opponents. We didn't lose any match. And I think, am I right? Yeah. My memory, we didn't even lose a match throughout the end. We drew and won every single match.
Because we scored in the final away match.
Great team performances throughout that entire tournament, obviously, to win it. So it wasn't all him or anything. And he wasn't the only one on there. I don't know who else was, but I know there was more than one sounder. I mean, we won the whole thing. I think Raul was on it.
Most definitely. Freddie, probably, because he had a ton of goals, especially penalty kicks, because Raul was hurt for the beginning of that tournament.
How crazy. Freddie Montero on the Champions League best 11 on the basically his last. He didn't really play last year, right?
No, he's playing right now, though. He's back at his hometown club, so doing well, looks like. Good back in Colombia.
Yeah, so we should say what the trade was, I guess, right? So we got an international roster spot in addition to freeing one up by not having him anymore, if I understand correctly. But that international roster spot is for 2025.
Yep.
And
That's next season, because I was like, dang, that's a long time from now. Oh, wait, that's just next season.
Yeah, we're a quarter of the way through this century already. $75,000 in general allocation money for 2025, which doesn't seem like a lot. So I guess GAM is the kind of stuff you can just kind of
the big thing is the international roster spot, really.
Yeah. And he was, last year's salary was $750,000. So just his actual salary is not on the books anymore either.
Yeah, well, actually last year's salary, he did count heavily against it and they laid it out. I think Nico Moreno said it should free up around $1 million. I had forgotten that he re-signed the contract this offseason to come back. Last year it included...
Nice. Okay.
Last year it had included that $750,000 included the transfer fee, which gets spread out throughout the contract over a number of years. So he wasn't actually making $750,000. That's how much he hit the cap for. So he,
which is all I care about.
He was making far less. And so I think the amount that we will get back is less, but you know, it's still very, very helpful. You know, I think O'Shannon, his article said we had $1 million before you count all the raises that went in, which tons of players had raises. So it really, the numbers just aren't out there yet. I don't think they're released for the season because ultimately we have zero cap space. That's what they've been saying. This frees up quite a bit for next year for sure.
Okay. So great for us. It sounds like
this summer it frees up space too. You know, I think coach said it in an interview today where it will allow us to go out and sign a player in the summer window.
I just wish that there was like NFL level transparency to the salary. Like, we know exactly how NFL teams, how their books look.
Yeah.
And you can start doing some projections and conjecture and figuring and doing your own kind of GMing on
what smart they should people do. To tell us, because they're dead cap and all that stuff makes it insane. But
yeah, but it's not like the NBA, which I just don't even attempt, or like MLS, which I don't even attempt. Baseball is just pretty cut and dry as well, but there is no cap or anything like that. That's a whole different.
Yeah, the only time baseball is tough is when you're figuring out arbitration and how much a player will receive in their upcoming contract if they win arbitration.
Yeah, but that's all figured out in February. Yep. Then you know exactly how much they're getting paid and you move on. Yep. So, but it would be nice to say like, okay, so who could, how much game do we have that we can use to, if that's, would you use targeted allocation money to buy down contracts?
Yeah, if you're buying down a contract in terms of like a DP not counting against the cap. Yeah, that would be TAM.
Like
money.
If we wanted to buy down, like, say, Rusnak.
Yeah.
I think he's in the 1 point something million.
Right. So he's a DP in name only. Like, they would, I think they paid down someone else whose contract was more friendly in that season. So really, he would have been paid down out of the DP level, but they did it on someone else. So TAM, here's the actual number: it's reserved for players who earn more than the maximum salary budget charge of $651,250. So you can use TAM to pay down money off of anyone who makes more than that. So designated players,
like say $700,000, you use the TAM to pay the difference.
Yeah. So if you reduce it, so a designated player whose wages surpass $650,000 and doesn't exceed $1.6 million from last season would only count $150,000 against the cap. TAM player counts $200,000 against the cap. So. That's the big thing about TAM. TAM can't be traded. GAM, though, as we've seen right now, can be traded. So it's general allocation money. And we saw so much GAM go from Toronto, millions essentially go from Toronto to Miami. There's like 1.2 million, which is the reason they were able to do the things they did with their roster.
Can you just use GAM however you want?
Yeah. So, for example, in the 2023 MLS season, so last season, the base salary cap is $5.2 million with an additional $1.9 million available in GAM and $2.7 million available in TAM. So you have to spread their budget across 18 to 20 players. So the maximum charge is $650, just over, and the minimum is $85, which is nice because it was like $35 not that long ago. So basically you get more GAM than you get more money. That's basically $75,000 they can spend on a player. Not a lot in the grand scheme of things, but that could be the difference between signing a player for a little more money and not.
Yeah. Fucking nuts. Okay.
That was all courtesy of our friends over at St. Louis, Zach Lowry, who works for the St. Louis City FC team, or SC. I think they're SC, right? Wrote an article about it to explain GAM and TAM, Soccer 101, general and targeted allocation money, explaining to their fans. And it was very helpful for us.
And
forget the general idea. There's a cap, but you can offset the cap with GAM and TAM, and you can acquire more GAM. You can't acquire more TAM.
All right. Before my head explodes, on to the next one. I wanted to bring up the new set of MLS match rules.
Oh, we saw some in effect this past weekend.
We did. So I'm going to read what there's three of them. I'm going to read one and then we'll talk about it. Read the next one. We'll talk about it. Read the next one. We'll talk about it. Cool. Does that sound good? So it's not, I'm not reading a novel here.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first one will be off-field treatment rule. Now this one, I was kind of like, what? Okay, don't they already kind of do this? But rather than treating a seemingly injured player on the pitch, the medical staff will now be able to bring them off the pitch for further assessment. This is to not only create less pressurized circumstances for the medical staff to treat a player, but also to continue the match as quickly as possible. This only applies when a player is on the ground for 15 seconds or longer, but is not required in situations involving serious medical events, goalkeeper injuries, potential head injuries, or the initiation of a yellow or red card after a foul is given. Summarize that.
If someone's hurt and down for more than 15 seconds, they take them off the field to treat them, unless it's an emergency, obviously, then they treat them right there. And then the result of that is they can't come on for how long? What does it say? I don't, 20, is it a minute?
It doesn't.
Oh, so they can't come on for a certain amount of time after. I can't remember if it's a minute or 2 minutes or what.
So don't they already do this?
No.
If they're on.
They hold them to the side. I mean, they treat them on the field. Then they take them off and they stand up and then they can come on. Not immediately, but once the game is back in play. Now they can't. They have to sit there and there's a timer that runs and they have to
wait. This doesn't mention anything about a timer.
Yeah, that's not the full rule then. There is a timer now. That's the whole point, is it's to prevent faking injuries.
Come on, SoundersSC.com staff.
Yeah.
Do the whole rule. Okay, well, that makes a little more sense, because it's like, well, they have to leave the field, and then they come on after the ref kind of waves them on.
Yeah, so it's okay. Referees. Okay, so yeah. It's because the time substitution rule and some of these other rules, I think, apply to that.
Okay, which we'll get to in after that. All right, well.
We did see JP go down, walk off under his own power, and then they did have a clock. They didn't let him on right away, which was interesting, but it was far less than a minute. So let's see here. So according to CBS Sports, when we go to that, any player substituted may leave the field of play at any point within 10 seconds if they fail. So it's part of the same rule, essentially. It changes based on subbed or not.
Okay. Well, let me read that. Timed substitution rule.
Yep.
After having success in the 2023 MLS Next Pro season, MLS decided to integrate the timed substitution rule into its own league. This means that substitution exchanges will have a 10-second limit. If the exchange fails to be completed during that allotted time frame, the incoming player will have to wait another 60 seconds before the next stoppage time, and the substituting team will have to play down a man. This does not apply to injury or goalkeeper substitutions. This does not apply to injury.
Okay, so it doesn't apply. So the whole logic of it being towards to prevent faking injuries then is not there. However, what this does do is it prevents time wasting. And according to CBS Soccer, there were 3,200 substitutions at MLX Next Pro. 99.7% of them, people were able to leave the pitch within that time frame.
Okay, so this is like the pitch timer in baseball.
Kind of, yeah.
Essentially,
it's essentially what it's doing.
Which I'm okay. I do like this. Will prevent the slowly walking off stuff.
Yep. And you have to walk off.
It's going
to
be annoying if we're winning.
So you can't do what Eddie Johnson would do, is walk to the far corner of the field and then have to walk all the way back. You just have to go off at the closest in line or out line.
Which you could already do anyway.
Yeah, we were doing that last season and maybe half of the season before. But yeah.
And here's the one that came into play. It was a more obvious rule that we saw implemented this last weekend. In-stadium VAR announcements. Whether it be an explanation of a penalty kick call or a goal that looked barely over the line, fans in the stadium and those watching the match on television will now have access to why certain decisions were made through the new in-stadium VAR announcements. After reviewing a specific play through the video assistant referee, the head referee will relay the information they saw in the playback and provide their reasoning behind the final verdict. And the fans will boo.
I mean, I had that part. I was underwhelmed by the way he used it, because he said, due to a dangerous challenge, it's a red card. He didn't say, due to a challenge where Reagan stepped on the calf of an opposing player while he shoved him down from behind, he's received, it is deemed dangerous play and there's a red card. I think he should have to describe the action as well, because that would have, I mean, people would have still booed, because MLS fans are turning into NFL fans where they boo every referee call, even when there's right, when they're right. And I hate that, because it makes the fact that you're booing less significant. And so the referee won't think twice next time. If you're booing every single right call, if there's one that's questionable and makes them think, they might then give you a makeup call. Right. So, yeah, I didn't like the way he used it. I felt like he should have explained more what happened, and then maybe, cause it seemed ridiculous. And like, I watched that replay 100 times and it, cause they showed it over and over again. I think, someone on Twitter called it responded to me, called it Zapruder-like in the way he was looking. You know how in the Zapruder film, they go back and to the left, back and to the left, the JFK assassination. That's what the middle ref was doing there as he looked at it literally over and over again, 50 times in a row. And I didn't see the step looking dangerous any single time. I've seen it from another angle now. I think a red car is okay there. I hate to say it.
Talking about Reagan.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised Alex didn't get extra games banned for his red card, because that one
was atrocious. I'm surprised. Oof. I'm surprised about that one.
That's one of the worst red cards we've seen committed by a sounder.
For real. We're getting into the match a little bit, and we're 30 minutes in. So I think we should get to that point. Let's get to this interesting match that we just witnessed.
Terrible.
Well, I think it actually, this match against Vancouver, which was poised to be, I mean, we had a killer match against Montreal, right? And then a dud against Dallas, which we were away in Dallas. Whatever. I believe there was some heat there. When I was there, it actually felt like Seattle. And then, but the weather did say it was going to be like 85, 90 in the upcoming weekend. So I don't recall if it was a typical Texas heat when they were playing. But I mean, to go to Dallas has always, I feel like, been tough to get a win historically, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
I'm not upset that we didn't win that match. It was just kind of boring to watch.
I think that's what upsets me more than anything, is we were the better team for about, I don't know, 15 minutes of that match. Not straight, spread throughout the 90 minutes, and the rest of
cumulative.
It, there never looked like a point where Dallas was going to score. And we both just looked like sorry, hapless teams for most of it.
And that's all we need to say about it.
Yeah.
But coming off of that, I mean, it was a draw. And what have we been kind of saying for this De La Vega injury until he re-injured himself? On. Yeah. Was to just kind of stay steady, don't sink, win, draw, win. Something like that, right? Try not to lose too many matches in this break.
I'm slowly, as I interrupt Aaron by showing him the skateboard that San Jose.
I was going to say, nice deck.
Yeah, that we talked about on a previous show. It's perfect. A visual cue on an audio podcast.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for distracting me. No, but anyway, leading into this match, I was like, man, this is going to be a fun one. This is one I wish I was attending in person. Hindsight is everything right now.
Right. I think, though, that was me. I was really excited. And that's why, for me, this was it's been a while since I felt this let down by a Sounders game, especially now knowing that I have less of a problem with the first red card and the second one was obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I kind of mentioned in the first half of the show, and then I was like, no, we'll just talk about the second half of the match in the second half, that I actually thought we played pretty well in the first 37 minutes up until the Reagan red card.
Yeah.
We were moving the ball. We probably should have scored at least one goal between Morris and Rusnak.
Yeah.
I think Morris had like, two headers or at least one.
It felt like some of those games to me where like we clearly should have been leading and we just couldn't get anything in the net yet, but something was coming.
Yeah. And we were playing downhill, which is what I've been asking for on our shows, is that it just feels like we move slowly forward and then just stop and don't do anything to unlock any goals really until we saw the Montreal match, which is like, did the levy break? But in this one, we were playing downhill. We had some opportunities and it felt like, okay, there's a goal, at least one goal in this match. And our defense was looking all right at the time. Stefan Fry looked great, I think. And then the red card happened. And I was watching at Nunchuck's Brewery in Linwood with a buddy I hadn't seen in months. So I had it on my phone. We were just having some beers. So for me, I wasn't one at the match with a Jumbotron. They don't call them that anymore.
Because they finished... Yeah. They shut down the vertical one now because they're replacing it, but they have replaced the horizontal one, and now it's the huge one ready for the Seahawks season.
I'm excited to see it. Yeah, so, and I also didn't see it on my new 75-inch 4K OLED TV. But on my phone, and even the commentators were like, ooh, that's not a red card. I mean, yellow for sure, which he got.
Even the Vancouver commentators didn't think it was, commentators didn't think it was a red card. At halftime, I think Jackson Feltz called it embarrassing, quote unquote, embarrassing and horse bleep.
Did he say shit?
No, he said bleep.
Oh.
It's FCC rules. He can't say it.
I know. That's why I was asking. So, I mean, I think the key for me is it wasn't, I don't believe it to be an intentional stomp at all. And also, he's behind him. Leg was kind of dragged a little bit. And I wouldn't say maybe dragged, but was extended behind. And that's where Jackson Reagan's foot was going to go.
Most with or without the leg there. Clear and obvious. If you had to look through it for that long, was it clear and obvious?
5 minutes, I believe. At least it was 5 minutes from the stoppage of play to when he did his announcement.
Now, I don't have a problem with getting calls right. I would prefer the rule is we're going to call the right call. The NFL does it wrong. MLS does it wrong. Baseball does it right. You just say, this is the correct call. I don't think there should have to be evidence to overturn it a certain level. I don't think that it should have to be that way where it has to be clear and obvious. But that's the rule. And if that's going to be the rule, it seems to me if it takes that long, it's obviously not clear and obvious.
I think the NBA does it right as well. Granted, the NBA is on a basketball court, so everything moves a little bit faster, so you don't get a sense that this is taking too long.
And
a good minute or two.
I will say the NBA gives a little more input to the referees than MLB does. I don't want, especially in MLS, I don't want the referee having any say. Have someone back at the home office make the call, tell them what it is. Boom, just do it. Because we've seen this past weekend, we saw in the MLS, we saw it in a Premier League where they go to VAR and they still get it wrong. Because they refuse to overturn themselves.
Yeah, there's the ego card getting played.
Yep. But that's where I watched the replay. It was on my phone. Because they actually showed three windows. One was him watching it. One was the people back in New York walking him through it. I'm assuming that's where the MLS offices are for replay.
I believe you're right.
And the other was what he was doing. And so that's when it was like, it was just that little push around. What happened? Yeah, I mean, it deserved at least a yellow.
Yeah. And
if he called it a red on the field, I would be more okay with it. The fact that he didn't even give a card on the field, that's what bugs me.
And like you said, clear and obvious, and takes probably, 3 to 4 minutes of actually watching it and doing the loop over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Puts a different context to it, right? I think a full speed should be, watch it in full speed. Now you're focused on it versus peripheral or missed it completely. Watch it in full speed. Was this a red card?
Because things can look worse than they are at half
speed. Oh my God, yeah.
At a tenth of the speed.
Yeah. So anyway, I tend to agree with you. I'm not actually overly upset that it was a red card. I'm more upset with our response to that. Hmm. And then the subsequent red card that Alex had
that was bad.
Was unreal.
Field, it didn't look bad. It looked like he had stepped on the ground and then rolled over backwards on him, to the point where we were sitting, my dad cussed. My 83-year-old father cussed at the referees, which he doesn't cuss. He has to be so mad to cuss.
He's a very gentle man.
Yeah. So visually, it didn't look that bad. But then when you saw what actually happened on the replay, holy cow.
It's like he said something about the rolled on mama. And Alex was like, excuse me? And like, I'm taking you out, motherfucker.
I mean, he stepped like, through the top of the back, like his calf, essentially.
Almost his knee.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of gave me Mullen vibes. Like, that could have been really, really bad.
Yeah, I think the difference was it wasn't on purpose. His foot was going to ground, so it wasn't going through him. But yes. I think it
looked on purpose to me.
You think so? I mean, I didn't watch with purpose because his foot was going down as opposed to through. That's why I didn't think it was on purpose.
But it looked like it was going down on his leg.
Yeah.
It didn't look like Alex was in a natural position with that leg outstretched like that. Like, what are you trying to do with that leg? The ball is on the other side.
Yeah, I think he just missed the ball entirely. It was such a bad challenge.
It didn't look, you literally have to go through the player to get to the ball. Anyway. Like,
yeah, it was rough. And I don't know. I mean, I'm honestly surprised he didn't get a bigger ban.
The commentators immediately said, that looks like it's going to be a few more matches immediately after.
He said, Jada Evans of the Seattle Times reports that he said that he didn't have any malice or intention to hurt Ali Ahmed when he made the play. Ahmed didn't have full control of the ball when the midfielder received a pass from a teammate, rolled on, attempted to gain possession, but with his cleat spikes up, went through him. So I saw the ball pop.
Maybe
up.
Maybe I'm misremembering.
Challenge. He beat me to the ball. I definitely didn't go into that challenge in a professional manner. I take accountability for that. That was a bad moment.
Well, I like hearing that. And maybe I'm misremembering a little bit.
He said, I hardly ever go into challenges like that. I'm not the most athletic or strongest person, so I tend to avoid challenges where I'm forced to outcompete someone. And I read it wrong. So he came in with his leg very high.
You know, this reminds me of...
That's clear.
This reminds me a little bit of, like, I played Little League. And I'm... You know me. I'm 6'2". I've always been tall. I kind of stopped growing at about freshman year. I think I was, like, just over 6 feet. And over the course of, like, 4 more years, I got another inch and a half. But I was always the tallest on all my teams.
Wow.
And you'd have to... Little League doesn't really teach you sliding very well. And also, we're not athletes. And sliding isn't very easy. I mean, throwing yourself to the ground somewhat gracefully and sliding on... These aren't MLB fields in the league. These are, there's like little pebbles and shit that hurts. And I was just so like terrible at sliding. And it was, it felt like what Alex just said there. I'm not very good at I'm not very strong or athletic to kind of routinely throw myself to ground and win tackles. So he doesn't try to do them too often. And it's like, I tried not to slide in Little League because I'm probably going to hurt myself or somebody going into second base.
Let me tell you,
either like 5 feet too early and then, you know, hitting ground and flipping forward or breaking a knee or something. So it kind of felt like, yeah, it maybe wasn't on purpose. And he's a nice guy. We know Alex. It now, just looked really, really bad.
It
did. And
it looked bad. But I want to talk about sliding in Little League. I played at my first year was like Mont League, so it didn't happen then. But my second and third year of Little League, so that would have been what, like fifth, sixth grade, sixth, seventh grade, somewhere in there. We were at the Arboretum, and I forget what the stuff is called. I'm sure one of our listeners knows and remembers. Here it's called it doesn't even say here, it has a name. I know Paul Cox knows it. The field now is really nice, but back in the day it was made of crushed bricks. So anytime you slid, your uniform got torn up and your legs got cut up. So there was not a lot of sliding. I did have a guy wear metal cleats slide into me when I was on third base once and cut up my leg, which we weren't allowed to wear metal cleats. He spiked me just like Alex spiked that guy. But So back in my day, we used to have to walk uphill both ways in the snow with bricks.
Barefoot.
Barefoot, holes in our shoes. No, you're right. He shouldn't have gone into it quite like that. It sounds like I'm assuming he will not get extra games, but they have not announced, even though today would have been the day that they announced it. It's usually on the Wednesday that MLS announces their disciplinary moves. They have not announced them yet. So it did not come out today like we expected.
Maybe they're reviewing his foul over and over and over and over again.
Back
right now.
And to the left.
Yeah.
Back and to the left.
So – yeah, so my like 30,000 foot view of this match was I thought we were playing pretty well and probably had a goal or two in that match, and maybe they would have gotten a goal the way the first 36, 37 minutes were playing out. Then I just don't think we responded well, which I think has been kind of the MO of this team this year. Unless things are going perfectly, we don't really know what to fucking do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we've had a billion different lineups due to injury. We've had substitutions that are questionable, or at least because of injury lineup decisions that are kind of questionable. But you can kind of give a little bit of a pass there because we're just trying to figure out what is the best fit on something we haven't been training with this lineup or these players at these positions. We talked about maybe Baker starting at left back. But it's Nuhu again, and Nuhu is the more expensive, more experienced player and brings a different bit of dynamicism where I think Baker is just a steady Eddie. But I think when we had Baker in there at times this season, we needed that steady Eddie to kind of figure out the rest of the field and how we're moving the ball around.
I also think Baker is now more goal dangerous because Nuhu does nothing when he gets up there. Nuhu goes forward more, but it's not as...
It's kind
of
disruptive.
I am going into that match. I agree with you overall. However, going into that match, the fact that we started Nuhu was insane to me. And what it is to me is emblematic of the fact that Brian Schmetzer, there's two things we know about Brian Schmetzer. He subs too late and he goes with his favorite over the hot player. And when we had success, it was when we had Pineda sitting there pulling him back and no, go with the hot player. I think Freddy Juarez has not moved into a position where he feels comfortable telling Brian that, and it's hurting our team. I've said this before. I think this was another example where I think if we had Cody Baker in that game, we probably score before the red card. We still lose 2-1, obviously, but yeah, I'm with you.
Or maybe, chaos theory. Or butterfly effect. Or both. Yeah,
red card doesn't even happen.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't even happen.
So what do you think of the sub then? Because there was a lot of anger about Rui Diaz being subbed off and Arriaga being subbed on.
Well, hindsight can be 20/20 here because we know what Arriaga did.
At the time, there were people very angry.
I see why he was subbed out. Because didn't Jordan go up top?
Yep.
Yeah. When you're down a man, you are basically playing not park the bus, but you're a defensive mind. You're being preventative. And then opportunistic.
Yeah.
Offensively. Rui Diaz is not as opportunistic as Jordan Morris lends us to be. If we get a turnover and can counter.
In a different way. He's opportunistic in that if the ball falls to his feet in a dangerous
position, exactly.
He's going to score.
He's opportunistic if the ball falls to his feet in an undangerous position, but it's still in the attacking third.
It was the right
for a breakaway.
It was the right sub. And it had to be Javi because he was the only center back on our bench.
Nathan was not in the 18. At the lineup. Nathan's not in there. I could have sworn I saw him in the 18 at least a match or two ago.
The other option is they could have put in Bell, who hasn't played in minutes yet this season.
A single minute.
And then moved someone in from a back into a more center back role. Or, put in at like right mid or left mid and then drop one of them back and played more of like we do when we have five at the back, but really it's four plus one person that shuffles back and forth on each side.
Which could have made sense with using Christian maybe as that kind of a pivot defensive.
But I actually thought it was a great sub. It just had to be Arriaga because that's who was available. And then ultimately he made the mistake that put us away. I was less mad at the mistake that Yamar made where he gave the ball away because that didn't lead directly to a goal. That led to a pass where someone else had the chance to make a stop and didn't. I thought at the time it was Nuhu because he was the one standing next to him running at his side. But Nuhu actually, as one of our followers, friends on Discord laid out for me, Nuhu actually tracked over from the far side and just couldn't make it there in time. It was Obed who didn't run with him, which is frustrating.
And to be fair, that ball, our midfield was moving like we're about to move the ball downfield.
Oh, yeah. They took off. We weren't had to stop on a dime and come back.
It wasn't like we were on defense and we weren't marking.
Yeah.
We had possession. We were supposed to play that ball out, which we typically do. So I don't really fault the midfield for starting. If you watch it, you see Obed and you see Joao jogging as if like, hey, we're moving to midfield now. Yeah. We're moving the ball to midfield and into the attacking. Like, and then all of a sudden there's a turnover and they're sprinting back and Gould.
Yeah.
Scottish Messi, whatever. Yeah. He just was in the right spot to receive a pass from the turnover. So I agree with you. The Hobby like one was Nuhu, absolutely stupid.
Oh yeah. It did feel like Nuhu didn't run full speed like he would have if he had the ball, though. It seemed like he kind of jogged over. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm biased.
Yeah, you just wanted to.
But I've seen him run.
Want to give him some blame.
I've seen him run, and that was not the – and it was probably because it was later in the match. We're down a man. He's tired. Because he – it just felt like he wasn't – his closing speed wasn't what it usually was.
Yeah. I still don't put any fault on him.
No,
I mean
he was trying to save the day.
If he sprints to Gould, Gould plays it back out to where he just vacated, and there's a wide open shot there too. So he's probably caught a little bit between two minds, and it was a fast play. It took 3 seconds to happen. So anyway, just terrible match. But I still think we're just in a bad spot, not a bad team.
I hope so.
It's just I still think that way. You look at the lineup, and you're like, hey, that's a good lineup, and it's not our best.
Yeah.
You know, so I think this all really falls down to Schmitzer.
I don't know if I agree on the latter. I think that minus De La Vega, that was our best lineup. I think that's our best available lineup for any game, and that's who we'll be starting.
And Leo Chu's an option as well.
Leo Chu is now, I mean, they're not going to start him over Jordan.
I know, but he's a dynamic player. So I think coming off the bench now, I think we might, hopefully that might, you know, light a fire under his ass or just put him in some good positions with a tired defense.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Sure. You know,
something like that. But it gives us some options that are, can be aggressive. But De La Vega is the key, and I think unlocking this.
But we
and
should be able to just win without De La Vega. I mean, that's how much talent we have on the field.
That was a great lineup. That was a great lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Atencio didn't start though.
No, and that's another one that people question, but I don't have a problem with it because Atencio has not worked with JP to the level that Obed has. And Obed True. And JP have a really strong communication in terms of when Obed should go forward, when he shouldn't, how JP will cover. And so I actually think it was the right decision in that moment, as much as Atencio has been playing really well. Now, I know we're almost done here. We only got a few minutes left. So let's wipe this match from our brains. It's over. We're going to DC. A bunch of people are traveling, which is cool. We're going to be, I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming at center back, we'll have Nathan starting. Who's going to start at right back? I mean, Cody Baker usually plays left back. Can he play right back? If Reed Baker Whiting's not healthy,
Jordan Bell,
Jonathan Bell, I think.
Jonathan Bell, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, I think he might get a start.
This is his opportunity, probably.
You could also see Christian.
We'll see everybody.
Christian dropping back there. The congestion.
We're going to see everybody.
So, what's your thinking as we go into DC against a team who, you know, they've had some rough years, but I think they're definitely not as bad as they have been in the past. You know?
Well, their record is 2-3-4.
It's a good record. Okay,
2-3-4. We're 1-4-3. Yeah. So ultimately, I don't care who the opponent is at this point. I want to be proud of the performance I see. I want to see a lineup work well together, figure shit out. And I just want to watch a match and not be disappointed. Yeah. That could even be a loss, right? You know, a 3-2 loss where we work our fucking asses off. And we see something that looks like, hey, that's a solution there. Because I totally understand, especially now with the congestion coming up, we aren't going to have our best lineup game in and game out for the next 8 weeks, 6 weeks, or whatever. Until De La Vega gets back. It's just going to be rough, and I'm prepared for it. But I want to be proud of the performance we watch. This is going to be on the road on the East Coast. I can't even think of a prediction. I have a request that we just are, they spent 30 minutes talking to themselves. Okay. Let's see what that looks like. Let's make the correct decisions on the field and let's not have one moment break the whole fucking match and have us throw our hands. And I don't also want to complain about referees, but that's out of our control. So
it is.
I don't care what the lineup is at this point, but I just want to be proud of the performance.
I don't, obviously, I'm pro union, but pro referees are so bad. It's not just this last game where we thought they did poor. They just in general are pretty bad. So, I think that's fair. I mean, I think we largely will have a lineup that's familiar with one another, absent Nathan. But we saw Nathan step in. Was that the first game of the season or the second game of the season where? He had some huge saves where he tracked back and
he's saved. Experienced.
Yeah. So yeah. I've been wanting him to be coming in over Arriaga for a while now. It sounds like from what I heard from talking to people at the Rain game this past Sunday that unfortunately we lost, that the it was visa issues, which is interesting since he had already been playing in San Jose, but obviously, he probably had to go renew it somehow. And so he's back. He's
new
playing,
job, new
he's
visa.
Ready. I think we could see him in more of a rotation if Reagan doesn't come back full speed. Because remember, 2 years ago, Reagan fell completely apart at the end of the season once he made some mistakes. So this is going to be a huge test for him from a mental perspective. And we hope that he comes through with flying colors and just goes out there and is the same Reagan he's always been. But you never know. So, Yeah, it should be rough. I mean, against they're in 10th place with 10 points. They've got some injuries. I don't know. Only one of the players I've heard of. Oh, no, I've heard of two. Burnbaum and Canoes. I don't know if they're still. No, Canoes was out with it, not for injury, so he may be back. So it'll be kind of fascinating to see what happens in the match. Yeah, I'm excited to see how we play, but it might be painful at the back because there's definitely going to be some players back there that are not used to playing with one another.
Yeah, and we might start creeping towards Muffin Top Model's anger or apathy.
I think we got right. A while until we get angry enough to be at his level right now. He's ready to blow the whole thing up. More power to him. I mean, you know, we love you, Tim, but I'm not there. I'm more likely to become apathetic. I've been a Seattle sports fan too long where it takes one Mariners loss to make me apathetic about the team. As yesterday, I was excited that we were in first place and going to win the World Series. And today I'm like, oh God, same old Mariners. Today they struck out, I think it was like 16 times, and they were all on breaking balls, of course.
Breaking balls.
That's what gets us.
Speaking of breaking balls, Sounders, don't break our balls anymore.
Nope.
Just give all right, where can they find you?
Legal Minded Punk on every social media feed, even the ones that no one's on yet. How about you?
At Aaron Lingley, AaronLingley on X.
Real quick before James takes it away, I don't think we talked about this because I think it happened last week. Rusnak is now officially Rusnak. He has officially changed it to Rusnak. So it is no longer Rusnak, and our soundboard is now off.
Let Roos cook.
Yep, let Roos cook.
Let Roos crow.
Ooh.
Shout out to Hook, by the way. One of the best movies of all time. He can fly, he can fight, and he can crow. All right, James, take it away.
You can follow the Sounders Scuttlebutt podcast on Twitter at @SSFCScuttlebutt. And for all inquiries, including questions for the gents, or sponsorship opportunities, please email contact@scuttlebuttproductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show for new episodes following every Sounders FC match. And don't forget to share your feedback by rating and reviewing. And you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at BritVoxus. That's BritVoxUS. We'll see you at Lumen, and go Sounders.
Alexa, who's the best MLS team of all time?
The Seattle Sounders are both unequivocally and irrefutably the best MLS team of all time.